Thinking about self-publishing and don't know where to start? Join the Spa Girls each week for a fun-filled podcast with honest advice, tips, and resources. I'm Trudy J.
I'm Shia Barrett.
I'm Cheryl Phipps.
And I'm Wendy Bella.
And we're laughing because we're still figuring out the intro.
After how many
347 episodes later.
We're nothing if not professional.
I mean, yeah. it's so ingrained in my head.
Yeah, yeah.
The 30 minutes thing that I want to say every time.
So. I know. The power of the neural pathways.
In my head, I'm saying it.
Yeah.
If you're saying it.
Yeah,
and it was a lie.
We can't lie to you anymore.
We can't do it. We can't lie to us.
Our bluff has been called.
Anywho,
this week we are doing a topic called how to create connections with characters for the readers, we mean, like, but as authors. And it started out by a comment made by Wendy. So I'm going to pass it over to Wendy and you can talk a little bit about it and let's dig in after that.
Okay. Well, I've read a few books lately. You know, I'm quite a prolific reader, as are we all. And I've just really well-written books, but they lacked emotion. There was no redeeming character qualities. Some of them, it left me feeling like I really like to get invested in a book. Mm. You know, and if I'm going to take the time to read a book, I want to be invested in that book. And I just haven't been, and I really want to get invested pretty much in that first chapter as to why I want to continue with the book. I mean, I won't put a book down. I'll read it even if it's crap because I just feel I need to, but yeah, they left me feeling a little bit blah, you know, so that's where I was going with the emotion thing. I think we tend to overwrite and forget the basic things that we really need to get right. And the basic things we really need to get right is that you want the reader to keep reading and you want the reader to be invested. I mean, everything else is really quite extraneous insofar as, you know, you want the reader to go with you through the book. Mm. And that's emotion, isn't it?
How do you get the emotion? It's the connection to the characters, right?
The thing is, I'm pretty sure that the books that you read were probably technically really
brilliant.
Well written.
Brilliant.
You know, well edited. They ticked all the beat boxes and they had all the requisite sort of rise and fall of action.
It's not enough if the reader, like you say, isn't invested in the book.
I just think it's really, really, really important to know your characters. You know, you really important to know what makes your characters tick. Mm. You know, what has turned them into baddies or goodies, or you know, what makes them scared of this or scared of that. But it's just vital to know.
We're not talking about their shoe size or their eye color, are we?
No. Mentally.
Yeah.
What makes them tick? What has made them become who they are? Going deep, layering.
Mm. I think it boils down to is this book something that somebody would recommend? You know, like if you don't enjoy a book, you're not going to tell people about this. It's really horrible.
Yeah.
And you might, and that's not a good thing. You don't want that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it is really important to drill down into what can make those characters appealing. Sorry, Dre, what were you going to say?
I was just going to say let's dig into that a little bit.
Yeah.
Let's figure out what you can do to make those connections and create the characters that we all love. And actually, one point before we do that, I just think we all know books where we go, oh, that's not very well written, but oh my God, I love it. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's all I would dare to suggest, that is generally because of the characters and the connections that they're making and nothing to do with. Yeah. So, so what is the, let's go around maybe. And what is the first thing that you would do when creating a new character? Maybe that's a good place to start. Like, how do you create a character that's going to, people are going to connect with?
You
can start. I was looking at you, Wendy, but you didn't know that.
We are so well behaved. We wait for you to ask us.
Oh,
you know, yeah.
First time ever.
Okay, for me, I like to try to get into a character. I don't plot anything, as you know, but I like to really try to I know where the story's going, but with the character itself, I want to know all of their pitfalls. Why they have, is it because their parents raised them that way, that they have an issue with eating Jell-O, or you know what I mean? It's like, I want to know before I start. the thing is, I've written books before and I've got sort of quarter of the way through and thought, oh God, I don't like this character. I don't know them. They're not gelling for me, you know, like, and that sort of thing. So for me, it's really important that I'm very emotionally invested in a character. So the first thing I'll do is I'll start writing about the character and then working out the things that make them tick, the things that have made them create, become the person they are. And that's sort of my sort of roundabout.
Do you always like them? Do you always create characters that you can like?
Yeah, I do. I wouldn't want to write about a character I didn't like. Mm. And I don't write baddies and evil people. I mean, if I have a baddie, you know, at some stage or other, they've been likable in the book. You know, that's pretty much just the way I am. But yeah, I mean, I think we all write differently, right? And I really like to like my characters.
So you would start, though, the process, it would be what I would describe as character-centric sort of story building, if you like. You start with the characters.
Yeah, I'm a very character-driven writer, though. Like, yeah. I mean, yeah. I don't really write huge scenery or, you know, there's a house there with, like, three bedrooms type thing. But the characters are the vital player for me. Yeah. They always have been, you know.
Yeah. It's what keeps people coming back. So that's
I mean, I think so. I think, you know, humor, it's all part of it. But it's really important to know the why, I believe. Mm-hmm. Why your character operates the way they do, what has made them. Like when you start, I'm starting again. When you start the book, right? At that point, their story starts, but their story started way before that. Mm-hmm. So what make them the person that you meet on that first page? Yeah. You know, that opening scene brings your character in, but why are they like they are? And that's all the back stuff. That's the creation of, that's the layering, that's the emotion. That's how I read it anyway.
Mm. I think the trick is to know all of that stuff, but not necessarily, you don't want to info dump every aspect of it in there.
It's not a whole chapter on their why.
Yeah. I mean, I think you can do it with, you know, gestures even, or, you know, you don't have to just completely overwrite the whole thing. But, it's just
And so do you, what about a character? Do you have characters then that are redeemed? Like they start out seeming like maybe assholes
She said asshole. So the last book that I've just written actually had a really grumpy character. And he was just grumpy. You know, he was like, she called him grumpy, a person. Mm. And he had his reasons for being grumpy, you know, but he had redeeming qualities. He helped people change light bulbs in their shops, and you know, like he came across as someone who didn't want to do any of that, but he did it. You know, go into a shop and there was a leak in the plumbing, and he's like, oh, "Who's fixing that?" You know, like, and so, but that's what I mean. You see that there's good to him, you know, and I think that's the way I like to write.
Like, it's not a switch from him being this grumpy,
no,
horrible person to suddenly being a fantastic person. He's just grumpy, and then you get to see
why,
and also the fact that he's not always grumpy.
Yeah,
but he's, you know, he's kind or whatever. But yeah, you don't have to wait till the end of the book for him to do one good thing.
Mm,
that's a good point. Yeah,
and I think a big part of that is knowing why he's grumpy. Like, it's that whole thing of, you can't, if you just have a grumpy character and it's never kind of talked about and they're just grumpy, then there's nothing to that, right?
Like, you don't want to spend time with a person like that,
But if you know that they're grumpy because they had, I don't know, some traumatic thing happened to them, or they were, their wife ran away with their best friend or something, you know, whatever, then at least you can feel some sympathy for that character and you kind of know and understand what's taken them to that place, and then you're more likely to feel connection to them. So you've got to think.
And there's the redemption factor, isn't there, too, you know?
Yeah.
And I haven't read the book, but I know it'll be great. And I can imagine already in my head, I can see the cast of characters around him, that some would find it amusing and others would take the mickey out of him.
It's right. I mean, the opening scene, one of the main characters from the book, from the series, comes up and he says, oh, we haven't got a town arsehole at the moment. Great. I'm glad you can sort of step into the role, you know, like, and so that's instantly like, oh, they all know what he is.
Yes.
But they're going to help set about, you know, turning him into someone he doesn't need to be, you know?
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So that's
cool. What about you, Cher?
Yeah. Wow, what a visual book.
Well, I can't remember the original question, but
yeah. No.
It was where do you start?
Yeah. So I don't really start with the characters, which is kind of, it's not the total truth, because of course if you're writing a series, you already know the character.
Yeah.
So you've got a good place to begin, wherever that may be. But for me it is the place and Cozy Mysteries, it's the crime, and the characters kind of fall into place around that. But having said that, I have to know a great deal about them, but I might not necessarily know everything when I start, which is maybe why Wendy's more successful than I am.
No.
Complete contradiction. But
I don't know everything about them.
No, exactly.
But a cozy mystery is a different thing, right?
It's like, so different. Yeah.
Cozy mystery, people are reading it for the mystery.
Yeah.
But you still got to have that connection to your characters. Like, people love the main sleuth in your series, and you know, that kind of thing. Like, they connect to her and the, you've surrounded her. Well, I mean, I'm thinking of the Maple Lane ones actually, but you know, like there's stuff that you are doing in amidst your books that are about creating those connections.
Yeah,
I think so. And in that particular series, right from the beginning, you find out that she's learned things from her granddad because he was actually a spy, and that enables her to do the things that she does through the story that potentially a baker would not know how to do. because she grew up with her grandparents rather than her parents.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there you go. That creates a whole nother level of characters and the why.
Yeah.
Immediately you say that and I'm kind of like, oh, grandparents, that'd change actually your perspective and how you experience the world. And a granddad who's a spy. Like, I mean, that's all kind of.
But the normal things, normal, you know, like a family situation where your mother runs out, you don't know your father, you're growing up with your grandparents, you know, that's normal for a lot of people. Like, people can equate to that, you know. And that's what you want. You want the emotion like, well, that would be awful, you know, and oh, wow, you know, the grandmother's so wonderful. And we all want a wonderful grandmother, you know, things like that.
Mm. Yeah. Exactly. But why was she raised by them, and what does that give her, and the layers of grief, and you know, there's so many ways you can dig that deep. You can find that what excites the character, what disgusts them, you know, all those sort of things.
What about you, Trudels? Where do you start with your character, like, story?
I'm all over the show, quite frankly. No.
Yeah, high five.
Yeah. And we're all like that.
This is part of my journey, I think, as well. And I've talked about this before, but it's like I started out and I had the idea for the setting with the carnival series first, but then I created the characters, and the characters were very big and strong and then I went to the dragon series, and that was very much like, oh, I needed to be fast paced and it was really plot driven. And now I've moved away from that again, and now I'm seeing I really want to connect with the characters. So the demon series is I've gone more in depth with the characters, and I kind of, you know, learning from Wendy and how she does it and other people, just trying to make that connection to the characters. And so I always will be a plotter, because I get stuck in my writing if I don't know what's going to happen next. But I think now, instead of having it as I, as the author, just decide what's going to happen next in the plot, it becomes I know this character, this is the situation, how would the character react to that situation?
Yeah.
And then that creates the next movement in the plot. And that's an interesting kind of change in perspective. So,
But you hear authors all the time saying, why did we end up there? You know?
Yeah.
And you know, you're writing the book, but the characters are driving the book, right?
Yeah.
And that's the truth of the matter. I mean, they go in all these directions and you're like, well, I don't even know where how that happened, you know?
Mm. Yeah. And I've talked about this before, but Steve Kaplan talked to me. I went to a course, this guy did like humorous screenwriting kind of course thing. And he talked about movies where you don't like them and you don't know why. And often it's because the characters have been set up a certain way, and then they do something that's out of character. And they do something that doesn't fit with this character they've been set up with. And it's because the plot has been, you know, like, this needs to happen for the for the plot of the story, but actually it makes no sense for this character to be acting in this way. And and that's when you kind of, and often readers, listeners, watchers, whatever you say, don't necessarily understand that. They just know that they're not connecting to the their character, and they know that it doesn't, there's something off. But we as authors have to figure that out and know about that. Yeah.
I think as a reader, you want the surprise of a different emotion, but you don't want a shock, like you say, of it being totally out of left field. Like they just wouldn't react to that. You know them already. They wouldn't do that, you know?
Yeah. So, yeah.
Exactly. And I would say, just because you and maybe some readers really relate to a character or really like the character or really get the character doesn't mean other people are going to do the same. So it doesn't always, this isn't a 100% game, is it? You know, I'm just thinking of, and I know I'm talking about the Bridgerton TV series here and not the books, but I struggled struggled a lot with series two with the younger sister that was marrying the Viscount.
Kate's sister.
Whoever the younger, what was she?
I can't remember her name, but I know who you mean.
She's forgettable.
Yeah.
I mean, no, I like the actress was great, but I just found her like completely unsympathetic, and yet she was set up to be the sympathetic character, but other people loved her.
Yeah.
Edwina.
And I think that's the thing. It's like some, you know, there's the whole alpha hero or the even the grumpy hero. I love grumpy sunshine. Yeah. I will, you know, sign me up for a grumpy hero every day of the week. And I'm sure there's people out there who hate them and think they're awful people and they just want, you know, whatever they want. And that's fine too. That's not, and I think our job isn't to try and create a character that's going to appeal to every single person out there, because that's impossible.
But I think it's when you're starting out, that's often you think you kind of have to, you know, you're trying to please everybody appeal to across the whole audience.
It's actually like one of those things that feels contradictory, but actually like when you're in marketing, going more niche and more narrow is actually better than trying to appeal to everyone. You get the right people, and actually more likely to become more popular if you narrow it down than if you're too wide. So and I think it's the same for us when we're writing characters.
And and trying not to reinvent the wheel. If you have written a lot of books and they've gone well, I mean, there's a certain way you write your characters that people love. So you don't want to try to change that, you know. I mean, I'm always thinking, oh, you know, after this many books, do I need to? And, you know, but that's actually not the case.
Yeah.
It's only as you go down the line that you are aware that you could potentially be making all the characters, even though they're different characters in the books, similar.
In the series.
You like that. Yeah. You like the trope and you like the way they behave and, you know. That's your ideal person or whatever.
Yeah.
So it does take some thinking once you've got more than a couple of books.
Yeah.
To try and find
something. Different characters.
How
do we get deeper down? And like I just keep having this vision in my mind of like when I first was thinking character wise, I was like, oh, you know, I love those clumsy characters who are just a bit goofy and naive, but then secretly turn, you know, whatever. And I think when you've got a backstory and you kind of know that actually they're not that naive and actually they're knowledgeable, they choose to be Sunflower and Daisies because it's whatever, there might be some backstory. That's cool. But when I first started out, I didn't see that there was backstory. I just thought, okay, I'm going to have this character who does this. And then I didn't know why. So I think it's that depth, right? Like it's the adding, it's the next layer down. You don't just
character interviews.
That's, go, Wendy, talk about
character interviews. If you're stuck, are probably the only thing I would plot and do. And that is you write the name and then you just go start writing a list of questions underneath them. You know, name, age, mum, dad, brother, relationship with brother. And you just start asking questions. And if you know the character well enough, you just sort of like, you know, that's why he doesn't.
The character's answering you, in
its own way, you know, you're like, if I am really struggling with it, my husband's like, just laughs when I do things like this. He's like, you're the writer, mate. Why do you, yeah. But actually asking the question of the character, what made them into the shitty they are today, you know, you it's quite interesting what you come up with. You know, it is interesting what you come up with. You know, what you have to know what angers them and why does that anger them and how did it happen that they got what situation? Yeah.
So you're answering it and so you're typing it out as if you're in the head of your character.
Yeah.
Because I think that's a really interesting thing too. It's like you're not just answering it as the author, you're answering it as the character. And it's another way that you get right into the head of your character. So that's
and it's better to do it quarter the way through the book or a little bit of the way through the book because you're not got that raw, you know, like that, you know, the character a little bit, you've watched the way they work with other people and that way they fit in the town and that, but there's just a few more things you don't know the answers to. And then you can just write those and you begin to understand, oh, actually, you know, that's why they're like they are.
Yeah. I think that's quite important too, Wendy, because I mean, there's no point in writing a whole book if you don't get their why, if you if you've misunderstood your character, because that's going to be a whole lot of rewriting.
We've all done that, right?
Yeah, but it can take, honestly, it can take a few chapters before you do understand them completely.
And it's not just a matter of understanding them, but it's like you've got to know, okay, they have this massive fight with their brother over something and they don't talk anymore and that's there's something, some big wound there. That wound becomes important to the story. Like it's not their backstory and knowing their why isn't just so that it can be sitting there. It's got to actually be somehow kind of dealt with or maybe not resolved, but at least kind of looked at or
reflected on. Yeah.
Or a reason why they behave in another way.
Yeah. And if it's a romance, which it is, right? You know, why are they not letting this person get close, you know, why is the relationship on face value the two people look perfectly matched but they're not perfectly matched, so why, what are the issues under the thing, you know, trust, you know, I don't trust easily because I've been hurt or you know that sort of thing. Those things, when you do a character interview, those sort of things quite often come out, you know, what. Well,
I'm
my
not
brother,
of love.
Yeah, my brother told me I was, or my brother was the favorite and I wasn't, you know, or you know, something like that. There's always a deeper meaning, and if you just take the time to understand that about a character, the book will flow better.
So that's basically making the character sympathetic, isn't it? When you hear that term thrown around about making the character sympathetic, and we're including both, like the main characters, and also possibly the villains as well. You don't have to agree with their reasons, but you at least need to have an understanding for the reader of why they're doing what they're doing.
And visually, you know, I think you can use a lot of those visually. Like we spoke before about it, and I was saying about a real hard lawyer, I was going to say hard-ass lawyer in a courtroom again, you know, and he's like just crucified someone, and he walks out, and when he walks out, he lifts his hand and it's shaking. So he wasn't quite as in control as you thought he was, because his reaction when he come out isn't that he can just flick it off and go, I'll have a coffee. His hands are shaking.
And anybody that's watched Pride and Prejudice movies, including the Keira Knightley one, you see Mr. Darcy clenching his hand.
Yeah, exactly.
Even
there's
though it's all
of
cool
that.
And calm on the
exterior.
Yeah. So it's a lot about showing rather than telling.
Absolutely.
Yes, that's something I always struggled with when I first started, and it was about, you want to really hammer it home to the reader that so-and-so, you know, Dolores is feeling terrified of what's about to come on the TV. And, but instead you're showing her by her hands shaking and she's lifting the cup of tea kind of thing. And I never got that, but now I kind of do.
See, but I went too far, I think, with the whole body language thing. This is something that I feel like I did and I've learned now. It's like I thought you had to show everything by external physical cues, and I was not telling the reader what the person was thinking, even though my books are quite deep in that person's head. And so that is another mistake. There's the show, not tell thing. Yeah, there is definitely a balance, because you need to, and it's still 100%. It's still show, not tell. Like you don't want to tell everyone that, you know, too much, but it's not just showing that she had shaking hands. It's kind of like you've got to have more than that. It's
some more context.
Yeah, like he might be, his hands might be shaking and he might be thinking, oh, I don't know, like something that, that kind of indicates that he's also, you know, Australian. You know, I hate it when I hate those kind of court decisions and I'm going to go to the gym and shake it off or something more that kind of.
Yeah. That, I remember I had a big issue in the beginning of knowing exactly how they felt in my head and not getting that on paper, not being able to convey that on paper. Mm. And it's almost like something's missing. Mm. And, you know, obviously it got picked up by an editor, but it's, but that was, a huge discrepancy.
So how did you go around about rectifying that, Cheryl?
You have to learn it. You have to learn and become aware. And you can only do that, I think, with keep critiquing your own work. And sometimes it's really obvious that you need, like when you're doing a second draft, it's really obvious that something's missing. And that's because you've pushed on and you finished the book, which we all advocate. And then you realise that there's some layering that needs to go in there, but sometimes you miss a step in that layering.
Yeah. Mm.
And it's actually really, really important to get that connection, get it early, and make sure that everything is on the paper that needs to be.
Because I think that's what we do as authors. We know the background or we know why they're doing it, but if you're not conveying that sufficiently to your readers, then that's going to be a problem. Like
the cues have got to be there for you and for if you've got a romance for both parties. Mm-hmm. You know, like I had a character that she was just a businesswoman, just seemed to be a real hardcore businessman, but she always fanned her fingers. That was her, you know, like, and he got onto that and he knew as soon as she was doing that, she wasn't happy and she wasn't comfortable. And that was the trigger because she was really buttoned up tight and didn't want anyone to get in. And that was her, that was his cue, you know, like things weren't working well. And
that's an awesome way to do it actually, that the hero is the only one who notices the tell.
Yeah.
Like,
That's very good.
You know, like it's important that if it's a love story that he or she is in on, starts to get in on it even before everyone else, you know, because that's where the connection comes from between the two. You know,
that's what we read. I don't know about you guys, but that's why I read romance. It's because of the connection between the two people and the watching it develop. So and
going back to Bridgerton series two again, you saw him, it sounds bad smelling her, but he would breathe in her scent. Like that was like no words were spoken, not even a lingering glance, but it was the whole.
And it wasn't done creepily.
No, it sounds super creepy. When
it doesn't say it. When you actually say it out loud.
Real creepy. Yeah.
And it would actually probably read a little creepy too, but I think it worked in a visual aspect as well. Yeah. So.
Are there other movies? I mean, I'm just thinking of other examples of where they've created emotion really, really well, like that we've kind of gone, I mean, Pride and Prejudice for me, and not necessarily the Keira Knightley one, I prefer the BBC kind of earlier one, they're not kind of, there's not too much of too many words, there's not intimate touching connections, but you know and you're right there at all times.
I think it's the senses, because particularly visually you're seeing it. We're seeing their senses reacting. So in Anthony's case, it was the smell, but you know, it's the, I think it's when you're understanding a character's, how their senses are reacting, that also is a real deep layer as well. That's taking you in there more than just the actions that they're doing.
But you use maybe the senses based on what you already know about their backstory, I think is the point. Like I kind of like you,
because one person's smelling a cigarette could bring the smell of cigarette smoke can either evoke something positive or negative to their particular character for their own reasons, kind of.
And if you set it up in the right way, you think maybe it's the smell of smoke, not necessarily a cigarette, and you set it up that they used to go with their grandfather to an old cabin, and they used to have a smelly old wood fire, and then she smells smoke down in the story, and you as the reader don't have to be told, again that, oh, this reminds me of my grandma, you know, like you've already evoked that and you know what immediately what it means to them and you're experiencing it with them. Triggers them.
Or well, maybe it was something awful, like, you know, they were caught in a house fire or something. And that, you know, that's a huge trigger and suddenly they're defensive or, you know, upset, you know.
They can change very, the personality can change very quickly with a trigger. They can be who they can be who they were all the way through, and then all of a sudden a trigger throws them somewhere.
And they break out into a sweat and you can just put that on paper, you know, and immediately you know that this is not a good feeling.
I mean, intense emotion, right?
Intense
emotion is what you really want to evoke in your characters, and then that evokes it in the reader as well. I mean, and it doesn't have to be in huge demonstrative ways. It's just more, you know, like the finger thing. It's like, oh, yeah. You know,
a visual aspect.
A visual, oh, like something's bugging her real bad, you know. But she's so buttoned up tight, you know, like that's what's evoking. Something's wrong.
So you want tension in every scene, don't you, of some type?
Well, it's driving the story forward, isn't it? You know, like.
Especially end of chapters, I think it's really important to leave you wanting more because you want to find out what's going to happen to that character.
Yeah.
What are they going to do about that, you know, that thing that just happened?
And actually shout out to our episode that we recorded with Mary Teresa Hussey, and she talked a bit exactly about that, like don't have them falling asleep at the end of the chapter. Like the reader and the and the character. But what I've got, I will link to it in the show notes, but I've got a really cool article here and I just wanted to read out one. She's got it's an editor and she's got lots of suggestions about, it's basically about putting an emotion in, but you know, it's talking about the characters. And one of the tips that she has is, let me just go down here. Sorry, now I've lost it after that one. It was basically it was making your character have two decisions. One's a bad choice and one's a worse choice. Yeah. So there's no good way about it. And in a way of really connecting with the readers or the readers connecting with the character. And I thought that was a really cool thing. Because often, I mean, I personally, because I consider myself a beginning writer, you tend to think black and white. So it's either a good choice or a bad choice. But actually having two wrong choices, one's worse, I think that's a really clever technique.
And then coming across why they made that choice, and then the reader gets that aha moment. Well,
and also the reader,
that choice.
And the reader will know that it's there's no winning here. And so naturally that evokes sympathy and connection. But also it's got that tension as well as, holy heck, what's going to happen here?
Yeah.
And also, haven't we all been in that situation at some point in our lives where it's like, yeah, no, you're going to pee off people if you do this, or you're going to do more than that way or whatever, or things are going to.
But also changing the way you've always lived your life is a massive thing, you know. Like if a character is a certain way and someone is trying to evoke change in them, you know, that's a huge emotional sort of pull, isn't it, right? You know, like you're being pulled in one direction, but you've always believed you should be the other way. So that's a massive emotional change.
You're going to be pushing back, aren't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Fighting against it.
Yeah, exactly.
I think actually sometimes occupation, which it can be a part of the emotion too. You think about someone who's a firefighter.
And
I think this is in some ways why military romance is quite big, because as a reader, you kind of go into it going, okay, well, he's a firefighter and he's probably doing it. You've got a certain code of honor, a certain belief system around that. And, you know, they want to help people and you know that they're kind of, or at least you don't necessarily know that, but there's an assumption that it's going to be like that. And that creates something. I know, Wendy, I don't know if you want to mention this because it's a book in writing, but you change the occupation of one of your characters and it immediately, in my mind, amps it up on an emotional level. Like it's nothing, the character hasn't changed. It's just what she does changed. And suddenly I'm like, wow, I'm 100% way more interested and invested in her. It's funny,
opens up that character to so many other aspects of their life that they can bring into the story.
Firefighter, police, all that, they're team players, right? You know, if you're a someone who's in a policeman or a firefighter and you're not a team player, why are you not a team player and how can you not be a team player? And it's about how the other people within that team look at you, they see you, you know, and that sort of side of things, I think, is massive for emotion.
Yeah. So it's about digging deeper and knowing the why of all these characters, and not just kind of having it surface level. You know, they're grumpy because they're grumpy, and they hate mice because they hate mice.
Yeah.
Not for a.
Yeah.
And if maybe, I mean, some people just hate mice because they hate mice.
Yeah.
But actually, for us as fiction authors, we need to know why they hate mice. And if it's a part of the story and it's, you know, it becomes a scene and it becomes something, then there should be something that connects, I think. She hates mice because she got locked in the cupboard when she was a kid and there was a mouse in there and it bit her or something. Why did she get locked in the cupboard? Because her parents were horrible. And then it's blah, 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 you know, like.
And you have the Indiana Jones scene with the rats.
Yeah,
exactly. Then he saves it from the mouse or whatever, down the track. It's all
Personally, my personal statement is don't trust anybody that hates mice, because mice are cute. They're super cute.
You and your mice.
Just rounding as the writers here, what would you guys say if somebody's really wanting, so we've talked about planning and all of that kind of things, any other tips for connecting readers with, like, really sealing that character connection that you would have at the, let's say, at the editing stage, like when you finish that first draft, is there any other processes or?
Look, if it doesn't hit you in the feels, it's not going to hit them.
Okay,
that is so vital that it's got to evoke happiness or extreme sadness, or it's got to evoke something in you.
Yeah. So you've got to feel the emotion when you're writing
absolutely.
It.
And it depends on the genre, what emotions you want people to feel. But they should feel some sort of connection, if not empathy or, I don't know, even immense dislike if it's going to be a bad guy, you know.
And it can be joy too, can it, of course, because it's not all, we're not just talking about all the negative
stuff. No, absolutely. It's emotion, intense emotion.
Yeah. I mean, even though I read some deep and disturbing books like Jodi Picoult or somebody like that, I mean, at the end, there's 99% of the time a happy ending.
Yeah.
And that's what I want. So I want that, and I better get it.
Yeah.
And that's the thing too. I think if you're delivering a satisfying ending, the reader has to have connected with the characters in order to get that satisfying ending. Otherwise, it's just
And if you're struggling with this, find a book that has created this emotion in you.
Yes.
You know, I mean, I've got one or two or three books in my lifetime that have just, I will read over and over and over and examine those pieces that create a lot of emotion in me. And movies are the same, like the scene in Dirty Dancing at the end when he comes in and he's like, nobody puts baby in a corner. I will watch that over and over and over again because of the emotion within that scene and the dancing and her joy on the stage and stuff. You know, I've got sort of scenes on YouTube that I'll just go back and rewatch constantly.
Do you know, I watched Dirty Dancing again recently, and I often find that when I'm watching, you know, there's these movies that you loved when you were younger and you go back and watch them again and you're like, oh, that was, I don't know why I like that. I went back and watched Dirty Dancing and, oh my God, that is such a good story. It still holds up. It's something, what is it, 30 years old now? Mm. It still holds up for me anyway as a really well-crafted story. It's got the layers to it. It's not, and I mean layers in terms of the story as well. Like, it's not just about baby and Patrick Swayze. Johnny. I don't even know what his name is.
Johnny.
It's about, like, there's a next level down about the Johnny's friend getting the abortion, and then there's and then there's her relationship with her father, and then that's all connected.
That's a big thing.
It was just so well connected together that it's just I just was like, wow, that was just a good movie. There's a reason that movie was so successful.
And it created so much emotion in you.
Mm.
And it's like I think the 2007 version of Persuasion is the same. There's a scene in that's the same, you know, at the end when she's running, and it's like they're just great. If you're really struggling to get emotion, watch something that makes you emotional.
Mm. And it's the build up, I've got another book as well that I listened to this one. Actually, it's backwards if you're looking at it on the thing. It's called Writing for Emotional Impact by a guy called Carl Iglesias. And for me,
it's Elio's brother.
Clearly. No. But I think this one is, if you're struggling to kind of go, oh, shivers, I don't know the practical ways of adding emotion. It's for the editing stage, I would say. Like, I've read through it and I can't remember half of what he recommended you do. But it's just, it's like editing stages. If I'm working on a particular scene and I know that I need to amp this particular scene up and there's something missing in it, he just talks about ways to amp up a scene and get more emotion into it, which is perfect. It's exactly what we're talking about today. So
brilliant.
That's nice. Something for people to look at.
Surprised that you had help people.
I know, shocking, right? Like, and I've even this is one I've listened to, actually. So it's not even just
that good?
A how-to book that sits on my shelf and, like, I somehow believe by osmosis that it's going to come into my head.
Isn't that how it works?
I'm sure. I mean, I do have a lot of how-to books where that is the case. But this one I've actually read and I do really, really, really recommend it. So anyway. So is that us? Is that
episode done?
That's
done.
That's all we wanted to say? Yes, yeah. Awesome. So
I just think we want to say a huge thank you to our Patreon.
Absolutely.
Yes.
You guys are amazing.
You guys are amazing.
Wonderful welcoming new people into our little Facebook community there. And our superstar community.
Yeah.
So, thank you so much. If you want to check us out, we're at patreon.com/SparGirlsPodcast. And we're at SparGirlsPodcast everywhere else.
Mm. And if I would want to say that everyone who's in our Patreon Facebook group, if there's anything that you, any suggestions for content that you want from us or anything that you want us to be putting in the Facebook group, let us know, because we're open to that kind of stuff. Like,
we're there for you to chat.
Progress.
We can live stream Wendy riding for 12 hours and listening to her talking to herself. We're willing to do that.
No, it's not pretty.
Did we say where we can be found already? I can't remember.
Yeah, we did.
Okay, done awesome. That. Well, thank you all for joining us for another episode of the Spa Girls Podcast. We will be back again next week. But for now,
Bye.
Bye.